Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 41. "We're already here, Boris. Time to wake up," said Said as he braked the freightliner to turn into the barricaded street leading to the hotel loading dock. "Oh, that didn't take long," said Boris, stretching in his seat. "Not that long, but you have been asleep for 3 hours," he said. "I didn't make any noise?" asked Boris. "Not a sound, sir," said Said. "I didn't get a chance to meet with our logistics man. We only exchanged emails. His name is Mr. Fahd. We should ask for him. I think things will go smoothly," said Boris. Said turned on the interior lights and rolled both windows down. "Place your hands on the windowsill, Boris. They have a very strict security out here in the desert," he said. The first tower was the same height as the truck's window, and the soldier spoke to Said eye to eye with his automatic weapon at the ready. He looked over the paperwork and looked at Boris's passport, then picked up the phone and spoke into it. Within seconds, he handed the paperwork back to Said and motioned for him to drive to the next tower about 100 yards further down the road that had large concrete barricades on both sides. Backing out with a trailer would have been suicide, and perhaps that was the idea. They had learned their lesson from watching the Marine barracks in Beirut. A truck was hard to stop once it got rolling, unless there were effective barricades and the truck could be kept a long distance away from the building until it was safe. The Shia Muslims had made promises that they would attack the Sunnis for their discrimination in Saudi Arabia. No Shia Muslim could be a policeman or teach school in Saudi Arabia, among other things. They had clashed many times during the time of the Hajj, but be that as it may, the two holy cities were in Saudi Arabia, and they would be protected at all costs. Said pulled up to the next set of towers, and a slide gate was open to their left. He slowly pulled forward and then cranked the wheel hard to pull the trailer around the barricade and onto the loading yard, which was all concrete. Asphalt under heavy trucks turning their wheels in tight maneuvers would be destroyed in the desert sun. Within a few minutes, he stopped just short of the dock. He was not allowed to get out of the truck until it was docked, so he waited for the staff to latch the doors open. He backed up until the dock lock gave them the green light and set the brake and shut off the motor. "Let's go, Boris," he said, opening his door and climbing down. The Intercontinental was a larger hotel with an enormous loading area. The fork truck set the two crates down, and the staff had the finely finished crate sections disassembled within minutes. The fork truck set the two whirlpools off onto the concrete, and the electric pallet jacks moved in to pick up both of them. The freight elevator was large enough to hold both units, and the hotel security staff with Boris. Said stayed behind with his truck and processed the paperwork. The penthouse floor was opulent, to say the least. Marble and gold and silk decorated the walls and floors, and there were lush ferns and several fountains operating with tropical fish swimming in the lighted water. Boris noticed another smell that was unmistakable. It was the smell of sex. Tomorrow the royals would come and bathe in this elixir of youth. They would bring their wives and their concubines and their child brides, and they would have sex for days on end while the peasants sweltered in the heat outside. The two whirlpools were placed in separate rooms with glass walls facing the stunningly illuminated Al-Masjid An-Nabawi outside. If one was not willing to bear the heat and the smell of worshipping with tens of thousands of pilgrims, the entire glorious view was just outside the glass. All in all, in every culture, the laws are interpreted by the members of the royal family. In less than an hour, Boris had the two machines filled and operational. He was escorted to the elevator and taken to the ground floor. He climbed into the truck where Said was waiting. "You ready?" asked Boris. "Yes, sir. I am returning to Jeddah tonight while it is still cool and the masses are sleeping. Are you coming back with me?" he asked. "No, I plan to stay here in Medina until tomorrow," said Boris. You are a man with no mercy for yourself, sir. Tomorrow is the Hajj. Are you sure? He asked. You know me by now. I am a man who stays with his plan, said Boris. Listen to me, my friend. I will take you wherever you want to go, and then I am fueling up at the truck station. I will take a small meal as well. If you change your mind, call me or text me, but at 2:30, I am leaving, okay? I hear you. I appreciate the offer, said Boris. Please, take me to the Marriott. I have a reservation. Ah, that is good. It is on King Faisal Road, and the truck station is only 3 blocks from there. If you change your mind, you are welcome at my home, said Said. I will keep that in mind. But do not think less of me for not accepting your kind offer, he said, trying not to sound like a Russian bureaucrat. Said negotiated the sharp turn in the barricaded road and headed down the loop around Medina to the Marriott Hotel. If I don't see you again, my friend, ma'asalama, said Said. Boris lowered his roller bag to the ground outside the truck, turned around on the step to extend his hand. Ma'asalama, Said. You are too kind, Boris. Good night, he said, gripping Boris's hand firmly. Boris closed the door from the ground and turned to walk away from the truck. He was a planner. In fact, he was a genius when it came to planning every detail. In all his years of carrying out mission after mission, he never felt like this before. His heart was heavy, and his steps came slowly as he approached the Marriott lobby doors. Perhaps it was the desert heat, or the long hours. Maybe it was the burden he had carried on his mind since the chilly morning when Sasha was murdered. He looked up and took a deep breath, and it made him feel better. The automatic doors opened, and he walked inside and up to the check-in desk. "How may I help you, sir?" asked the young man behind the counter. "Reservation. For Domashev," he said, almost unable to hear his own voice. "Of course, sir. There is a bottle of water on ice behind you, sir. You are free to have one." "Thank you. That may be what I need. My voice sounds dry," he said, opening a cold bottle and taking a long drink. He found it strange that ice-cold containers had no condensation on them. The bottle was cold and dried quickly in his hand. "That's better, thank you. It can sneak up on you, sir. Make sure to keep drinking all day tomorrow," he said, smiling. "I have your room on the top floor, Mr. Domashev. Are you checking out tomorrow?" "Yes. Yes, I am," said Boris. "Do you want a later checkout time, sir? It is nearly 2 o'clock in the morning." "Yes, sure. Do not disturb. Late checkout." "Thanks," said Boris. "No problem, sir. The elevators are down the hall on the left, and your room will be on the backside facing the Kuba Mosque. It's very nice, sir." "Is there access to the roof from there? I would like to take in the view and the night air," said Boris. "Yes, sir. There is a large patio on the roof, but for you it is fenced off 10 meters from all sides. Be sure to take water, sir," said the desk man. "Thank you," said Boris, and he headed for the elevator. Boris arrived at his room, and the desk man was right. The mosque was lit up by thousands of white lights splashing across the alabaster exterior. He stood there for a few minutes looking at it. He knew that tomorrow there would be millions of pilgrims who could not fit into Mecca that would be here to complete their path to heaven. He knew thousands more would go home to kill someone else's wife. He took a sip of water and felt the ice once again in his veins. He didn't bother unzipping his roller bag. He felt for the room key in his pocket and headed out the door. He walked slowly to the end of the hallway and found the door that said Rooftop Garden. He pushed the bar, opened the door, and walked up the 2 flights of stairs to the roof access door. He stood there for a moment, and then pushed it open. There was a good breeze across the rooftop of this tall hotel. He walked toward the lightest side and could see the rear half of the mosque across the King Faisal Highway, which was a loop that went around the city of Medina. He pulled out his cell phone and turned it on. Within a minute or two, it displayed the time. It was 2 o'clock. He remembered that Saeed would still be at the truck station having a small meal. He knew the blast would probably destroy everything within 3 miles in every direction. He wanted Saeed to make it home to Jeddah. He opened the text screen and entered the number for the 4 wool pools at one time. It would be a group text, fully encrypted and unstoppable. He only needed to type in the message and hit send, and the 4 warheads would detonate within nanoseconds of one another as soon as the sync lock oscillators were validated. It should only take seconds, and then the flashes would end the holiest cities in Islam. He walked to the corner of the hotel patio fence and leaned his head against the wrought iron. It seemed like it had been years since he held his sweet wife in his arms. He tried to remember what her hair smelled like, and he shivered slightly because he wasn't sure if he could. He took his hat off and looked up at the stars. They were nearly washed out by the intense white city lights shining into the desert night and the light dust that always seemed to be in the air. "Hello, Boris," he heard behind him. He turned, and in the darkness he could not make out who could be calling his name in this place. He put his hat back on and put his phone in his pocket. "Who is this?" he said in his cold, bureaucratic tone. "Oh, you forget so soon." The man stepped forward until the light of the mosque shone on his face. The scars were unmistakable. "You. What is a dead man doing here in Medina, I wonder," said Boris. "I have come to see you to the other side, Russian," he said. "Why don't you come closer, so I can send you first?" asked Boris. "You can send all of us. That is what you came here to do. Vengeance is a holy reason to kill millions of people. Don't you want to kill all of us?" asked the man. "You have no idea of what you speak, Daesh," said Boris. "You don't think I know about the warheads?" "Of course we know. Who do you think got them in the first place?" he asked. The blood ran cold in his veins. The only people on the planet that knew about his mission were Marina and Kalibnikov. He had volunteered to make this happen. There was no other technological way to get 4 warheads to detonate so close to one another. The EMP would fry the electronics of the bomb next to it, and there would be only 1 explosion. They had to go off together. The only way to make that happen was a cell call within the same cell zone for both bombs, and then to have the internal clock synchronized to within a nanosecond. They needed a man on the ground. It was pure chance that he was there, that he had sought them out. Or was it? "Our master is brilliant, yes?" said the man with the scarred face. "I have a choice," said Boris. "You never had a choice," said the man sarcastically. Boris took out his phone and opened the text screen again. He began to type in the code. It was a simple code. The name of his wife, Sasha, would light these bombs and kill Islam forever. It was there. All he had to do was press the send key. "Your God will die here tonight," said Boris. "You fool! Allah does not live here," said the man. "He never existed, except in your twisted mind," said Boris. "You deny the existence of God?" asked the man. "Oh, there is a God, all right, and I have felt him before. I know what God feels like, and he would never have killed my Sasha. He does not allow men to take revenge for themselves," said Boris. "Oh, aren't we all high and mighty now, Crusader? You are no saint, Boris, he spat. I know that. Believe me, I know that. But I have felt love and cherished another life more than my own. That is why I am here tonight, said Boris. No, it is not, shouted the man. You came here to commit mass murder in the name of revenge. Admit it, and press your button. You are wrong. I came here because I love my wife, and I want to save the world from your murderous jihadis once and for all. Killing your god means saving the world to me, just like I was protecting my wife the night we met Daesh. Admit you are filled with hate, Crusader, barked the man, pointing his finger at Boris. I have no hate in me, Daesh. In fact, if it means your mission fails, I will put those warheads to sleep forever. And with that, Boris deleted the word from his phone. He entered a new code and raised his phone to show the screen light to the scar-faced man standing 30 feet away. So, you will fail again tonight, Boris. Allah will become more powerful than ever and consume all of Europe, and then the great Satan and Israel as well, said the man. I perceive that this is a failure for you and your Dark Lord, whoever he is. You have spent lives and money to make this happen, and I will stop it with this button right now, said Boris. You want to kill us, said the man. You'll be dead soon enough, but not by my hand, said Boris, and he pressed the send button. Within a second, the message came back, read by each phone in the group. I am afraid I must be leaving now. Boris dropped the phone to the patio and quickly walked away from the scarred man toward the door to the stairs. The scarred man ran over to the phone and picked it up. He began entering random codes and texting over and over again like a madman as Boris disappeared down the stairs. He ran for the elevator and pressed the button. He kept looking over his shoulder for the scarred man, but he never came. The door opened and then closed quietly with only him inside. It moved swiftly to the ground, and he jogged out of the lobby and into the night. He picked up his pace in the warm desert night and sprinted the last block to the truck station. He gained the parking lot, and there, standing in the lot with his arms folded, facing the Marriott Hotel, was Saeed. Boris slowed his pace and approached him, breathing hard. No need to run, my friend. I got your text. I don't know what coming home means, but you are welcome to ride with me now. Let's go. We have a container to return. Yes, let's go home, said Boris. His mind was clear now from the burden of darkness he had carried since the morning Sasha was killed. The subroutine his text had initiated scrubbed the bomb controllers, making it impossible to detonate them. They both climbed in the truck and Saeed started the engine. Within minutes, they were miles down the road on the empty highway. What happened back there? Asked Saeed. My meeting was cancelled, said Boris, smiling. Only two people knew he was here in Medina at the Marriott. He knew he had been used. What he could not resolve was why Sasha had to die. Why did he have to bring the bombs here and detonate them with his mission of revenge? We all have our demons, Boris. The desert is a good place to get rid of such demons, said Saeed. The glow of the city was behind them about 10 miles when the truck suddenly lurched to one side and then the other. Hold on, Boris. I think we lost something, said Saeed, standing on the brakes to come to a full stop. They both slid to the ground and began walking back to the rear of the trailer when it hit again. They could not keep their feet and fell to the ground. The rumble sounded like a freight train was about to come bursting through the asphalt. They looked up into the dark sky and colorful streaks of light began swirling together high overhead. Green and lavender and white ribbons began dancing overhead like a desert borealis as the ground shook under their feet. Suddenly, a massive bolt of plasma came ripping across the sky and engulfed the city of Medina miles behind them. There was no sound to the gigantic plasma bolt. The city seemed to flash and shatter like crystal over the horizon. On and on, the flow of energy poured into Medina like a giant blazing bullwhip, lashing the entire metropolitan structure into oblivion. Then the shockwave began to build. At first, it felt like a hot wind. They gripped the asphalt with their fingers like they were hugging the side of a cliff. The wind began to tear at the sand, and Boris grabbed down on his hat and they covered their eyes. The container on the trailer rattled like it would fly off into the night along with them. Suddenly, as though the source had turned off the faucet of judgment, the end of the plasma jumped down into the city. The wind died down, and the rumbling ran off into the desert like a herd of black horses. They looked back for the lights of Medina, but except for a fatal yellow glow, there was nothing standing. "Allahu Akbar," said Said. "That was not Allah," said Boris, pointing up. "That was the end of Allah," he said, pointing to the ruins of Medina. "Let's get out of here." The two men drove for nearly an hour without speaking. They were convinced they were spared. In all of the world, two men were close enough to see the finger of God come down and destroy an entire city and every inhabitant, and yet far enough away so that they would survive. Boris knew it could not possibly have been those warheads. Said knew that one of the holiest cities in history had been evaporated from existence like Gomorrah of old. "Perhaps you got what you came for," said Said with a distant chill in his voice. "That was not expected," said Boris finally. "What was expected?" asked Said. "Something else. It doesn't matter now." "Something else," said Boris. "That was nothing of man," said Said. "I guess part of forgiveness is retribution," said Boris. "It is done then, Said." "I have a feeling it is not," said Boris, barely whispering.